September in the year 2002. We are now at the very bottom of Megillah 23b, or Chav Gimel Beis, and ready to, in a few moments, to start Chav Dalet. Okay. So, there is a Mishnah at the very bottom, which continues now with the question of reading the Torah. Okay? Some of it sounds similar to what we have already had, because it has already been quoted before, and as a result, I don't have to repeat too much over here, but nevertheless, we have to see exactly what it says, and then they add to it, and these things will require further elucidation. Okay. All right. The Mishnah at the bottom of the page, again, remember, it's Chof Gimel Beis, or 23b, says, HaKorei BaTorah, if a person reads the Torah, Lo Yivchos B'Shlosh Pesukim, you cannot read less than three verses, okay, three Pesukim. Not only that, for the Lo Yikro L'Venturgim and Yosef Posek Echad. All right, this had already been quoted before, and we explained that the Venturgim is the person who translated into the Aramaic language that people spoke. Okay? So, the custom was that they would read a verse of Torah, and then the Meturgimim would translate it into Aramaic. Okay? And then they would read the next Pasuk. And so, this is what it says over here, this part of the Mishnah, right? He has to read three Pasukim, right? But when he reads, he has to read a Pasuk, and the Meturgimim has to translate it. Pasuk by Pasuk.
What's the Meturgimim?
Exactly.
What's this?
A translator.
A
Meturgimim? Meturgimim is a translator, right. The Targum in Hebrew means to translate,
okay.
Right. Yeah.
Translator. Yeah.
Right. From this, of course, we have the noun Targum. Mm. Of course, Targum, you have various Targumim. Usually the Targum that they're referring to, the one in the Torah, is called Targum Unkelus.
Yeah.
Okay?
Now,
yes.
So how does the word apply in Targum Unkelus? Is that a translation?
It's an Aramaic translation
of
the Torah text. Oh, yeah, it's Aramaic, right. It says, by a Dabir in Hebrew, it says a Malel, okay? Because, after a while, you begin to get the hang of the Aramaic language, too. So by there we show Moshe, Maleo Hashem El Moshe. Okay, so as you can see, there are many things that Aramaic has in common with Hebrew, but on the other hand also it has a vocabulary of its own, which is not exactly Hebrew. Of course, the word Maleo in Aramaic, but it has actually its parallel in the Torah itself, because it's written when Sarah heard that she was going to become a mother, she didn't believe it. And even though she gave birth, she still couldn't believe that it had happened. So she said, Mimileli Abraham, who could have told, who could have said to Abraham that Sarah would be nursing a child? Okay, so far, that's what it says over there. Now we go to the next page, the Chav Dalet Omid Aleph, which continues now. And it says, Novi Shnosha. And in the prophet, in other words, when they are reading, the passage of what we call a Haftorah, you understand? Then in that particular case, the Meturgimim has to, he reads three verses and then the Meturgimim comes in and he gives the treatment. So in other words, they make a difference between how to translate the Torah and how to translate the prophets, particularly the Haftorah in this case, okay? In other words, Torah verse by verse, but in the Haftorah three verses at a time, okay? Yeah, okay. Then it says, now, if they were, however, in the prophetic teachings, that these verses are actually three different sections, in other words, let's say they deal with three different matters, you understand? Then in that particular case, the Targum would translate verse by verse. Okay. In other words, the assumption was, in the first case where they said that he could read three verses in the Hebrew text, right, and then Torgerman would do three verses, but the implication is only when the subject matter is the same subject matter. But, right, but if there are three different subject matters, then in that particular case, then the Torgerman has to do each one separately. All right, so that's what the Mishnah says today. Okay.
And we have to assume that they were very learned and they knew what this was.
Right, of course. Well, of course, the Gemara also explains this as we go along. Okay. Now we have a new teaching in the Mishnah. It says, Medalgin Midnavi, Yeh Medalgin Batoga. What it means over here is that you can skip from one section to a different section in the prophets, but you're not allowed to skip from one section to another section in the reading of the Torah. In other words, we can't do like what I saw once many, many years ago in Bethel, where they read a little bit at the beginning of the section and then they jumped to the Maftir at the end or something like that, you know, because there's too big a gap in between them, so you can't do that. According to the halacha, not saying that Bethel follows halacha, okay, but however, I'm telling you that at any rate is not correct, okay? And however, in the prophetic writings, it is permissible to skip from one section to another section. Well, hold on a debate, because when we have the Gemara, we'll see. Does it really work out or does it not?
But
okay.
Right. Yeah. The readings are chopped up in the Haftorah readings. You get from one book a little section and then from another.
That doesn't normally happen. It so happened. This is true as far as Haftorah that we read Shabbos Shuva. That is correct. This past Shabbos, right? So and also to the Mincha of Yom Kippur. They again, one of the passages that was read over there is also reread at that particular time and tacked on to Mafti Yonah. Okay, so that is true. Yeah.
Don't you find, for example, from Ezekiel, you'll find it here and then another portion here and another portion.
As a general rule, the answer is no. If it's Ezekiel, it's in Ezekiel. Okay, sometimes there may be a little skipping within the Haftorah itself for a different reason. For example, we have, one of the favorite sources, okay, of Haftorahs is taken from the book of the prophet Yirmiyahu, or Jeremiah in English, okay? And there are times in which Jeremiah is predicting that there's going to be disaster for the people of Israel unless, you know, they do tshuva and they act right, okay? A lot of the prophets, incidentally, you know, spoke along the same theme. Okay. But thinking, for example, you know, a particular Haftorah that we have in Yom Yahu, and then they take a pasuk which is not at that chapter. In other words, they were reading from chapter 2 in Yom Yahu, okay? But they concluded with a pasuk from chapter 4. Why did they do that? They did that for one good reason, that they wanted always to end the Haftorah on a positive note. So we'd rather conclude with a verse of consolation, of promising rebuilding Eretz Israel and things like that, than to conclude on a verse, you know, which predicts doom and gloom, etc., etc. You understand?
What about where they have Haftorah, the Sephardic will do this Haftorah,
all right, that already is a different problem. There it's a question of minhag, but again, they are pretty much doing exactly what we are doing. However, you have, for example, for a couple of subjects, what we have in the Parsha Bereishis, for example, Vayetze, and that there is one Haftorah by Yishlach, yeah. One Torah is picked by the Sephardim according to the Herz Chumash, and another one is picked by the Ashkenazim. Okay? So this happens sometimes. But nevertheless, what they will be reading will still be the same. Now, it is also true that sometimes you have that the Sephardic custom will stop at a different point. Okay? we have that occasionally. As for example, the Haftorah that we'll find for Shabbos Bereishis, which this year we're not going to say because it's also Baruch HaChodesh, in other words, the day before Rosh Chodesh, okay? But in that Haftorah, we Ashkenazim continue further than where the Sfarim stop. They stop with the Pasuk HaDashem Choveis Matzik Ko Yel Teviyadu, and they stop over there. We continue reading in the same section, however, Yeshayahu and so on, okay? So, this is a general rule, so, right.
But unlike Shekolim, they do a paragraph, they don't do the first paragraph.
Yeah, right, that happens sometimes.
The same thing.
Right, right, yeah.
Same tradition.
Correct, that's correct. Okay, so, there are differences of minhag. That is true. Okay, but still, the basic principle is that you don't go skipping around for another, but it would be more tolerated in the case of doing it in the Haftorah than it would be in the case of reading from the Torah. This is what the Mishnah says so far. Okay? All right. And then the Mishnah continued, and it says, the Abkhaba Ubedali, how much can he skip over? So the answer is, Abkhaba Shal Yusak Habiturgaman. The answer that they give is, as long as the Turgaman is still giving the translation, so you could mish to another section. Right? But once he stops talking, then you should be reading, presumably, at the place where he stopped over there. Okay? All right. So, at any rate, they want.
In other words, what they're saying is that just so they can understand, you pause, so the people who are trying to listen, so they don't become confused.
Yeah, well, while the people are listening to the Turgaman, then the person who is reading the text, and remember, in those days, they read it out of a scroll. They didn't read it, out of a Chumash the way we have. But they read it out of a scroll, actually, okay? So that person could, if he wanted, turn to a different section. Pardon me?
And the people in the congregation were not sitting in the room. They were dependent upon listening.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. Because I don't know how many people actually had them.
So in order not to be confused.
Right, yeah.
That's why everything had to be memorized, because there wasn't too much written down.
But you're not allowed to memorize Torah. In other words, you cannot read Torah from memory. You have to read it from a text. You understand? Okay. I mean, when I get up to read, I may know the text by heart, but I'm not allowed to read by heart.
You might make a mistake.
Of course, absolutely.
And I'd catch you.
I know.
A lot of Gomorrah was memorized.
Yes. All right. Anyway, let us continue right now. So now the Gomorrah analyzes the Mishnah text. Okay. First of all, the Mishnah started by saying, if you read the Torah, you have to read how many verses?
Three.
Minimum. Okay. So he says, Hanan Yim Sukim Keneged Me, these three verses. What does it correspond to? So I'm a Ravasi, can I get Torah, Nevi, and Ksuvim? All right, so it gives the answer, Ravasi, that you have Torah, Nevi, and Ksuvim, right? Torah, prophets, and the writings. Right. So therefore, it reminds us of that. Actually, we had a previous, a couple of Dapim back, where they also asked, about why three Elias,
right.
If you remember.
Yeah.
So this was one of the answers given, but another one was, for example, to correspond to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and so on. So, to correspond to, Kahanim, Leviim, Yisraelim, and so on. So here, he says the three verses correspond to Torah, Leviim, and Ksuvim. Okay, God's fine. Then says, V'lo yikra l'meturgaman, and he should not read for the meturgaman, to translate Yosef ben Posek Echad. This is what we said, as far as the Torah is concerned, right? Uvenovi, however, in the prophetic writings, so it's given, so he could do three verses at a time, and then the meturgaman would translate them. Now the Gemara continues, V'yim hoyu shloshtam shodosh parshiyos, actually he's still really quoting the Mishnah yet, and if these three verses that the reader is reading and the translator is translating, But let's say that they deal with three different subject matters instead of one connected subject matter. Then in that case, korei echod echod, that he reads each verse separately, and of course, what is Meturgeman doing? He's translating each verse separately as well. Okay. Kagon, so they give an example. This comes from Yeshayahu, as a matter of fact, it's still part of one of the Haftorahs that we read. Okay. There's a pasuk over there which says, Ki cho amar Hashem, ki nomen kartem. Ben Yishalem says to Israel, you were sold, and that wasn't right. I mean, you were sold for no value, whatever, okay. In other words, sold into slavery, sold into gomus, okay. Then he says, Ki cho amar Hashem, lekim, mitzvam yorolim yivarishana. Then he says, you know what happened once upon a time? Let's say the Lord God, you know that my people went down, first of all, to Egypt. Okay? So it's not exactly the same as Chinom Nim Kartem. Okay? I might be able to see a connection, but they claim that's three different, you know, two different sections. And then the third one is, V'yatam Alipo Niyum Hashem. Now the Rebbe Nishlan says, what am I doing over here? A little bit surprised, because what they do is they left out the rest of the pasuk. The rest of the pasuk says, "Shulukacha mi chidom," that my people were taken into captivity. So in reality, there is something over there. But okay, they felt that they were talking about three different things, and therefore the Targuman had to translate each one separately. Okay.
Well, maybe God entitled to his own category. Though.
All right, whatever. Right.
Separateness.
Yeah. Okay. Tosfos, if you take a look on the side over there, it says, "Vimoyush loshdam shal shalosh parshiyos kon echod echod." So it says, "Kasha b'shal mitargimim." So that's a kasha, because there is a haftorah also that we have in the book of Yehoshua that actually read that on the first day of Pesach. Actually, read "Vayom Yehoshua el ha'om hiskachul," and so on and so forth. That's one thing. The Yesham Gimum Psukim Ad Bo Esahi, there are three verses until you get Bo Esahi. Makrino Son Lam Targum. Apparently, in the time of Rashi and Tosfos, they still had this habit, this custom of having a Targuman give the Aramaic translation. Now, I remember Rabbi Sa'idi, or was it Ezra, I forget, one of the two, told me some time ago that the Yemenite Jews still do that, you know, when they read the Torah, somebody is still translating it also into Aramaic.
Into Aramaic. It's like an Aramaic interpreter.
Yeah, right.
But this is interesting. Why would they translate
into what? Aramaic?
Into Aramaic. Yeah. They speak Arabic, but not Aramaic.
Yeah,
right.
That's so,
but,
really,
you know, because the text, you know, as I said, the Targum text has acquired a sanctity of itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's no longer a question of understanding or comprehension, but it becomes a matter of...
It has
of
become a text by itself, text. Exactly.
Yeah.
Is
right.
Aramaic different from Arabic? What do the Arabians speak?
They speak Arabic.
Arabic?
Arabic. Yeah.
Arabic.
All
Nobody
three of those languages, plus several other languages, belong to the same family group, but it doesn't mean that they're identical. Just as, for example, French, Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, they also belong to a similar family group, and yet they're not exactly identical with each other. Many words may be similar, some of the grammar may be similar, but, you know, still, when you're talking French, you're not talking Italian, and vice versa.
There is no country today. Aramaic as a language is not a living language. There's no one that uses Aramaic.
There may be one tiny group. No. The Yemenites, this is not their language. They're translating it into Targum. You understand?
Okay.
Into Aramaic. But it's not the language that they normally speak. They can speak Arabic, or of course they speak Hebrew. Okay? Yeah.
What, do you say there's somebody that does speak Arabic?
There's a small, I think they're a Christian group, somewhere in Iran or something like that, that they still speak Arabic.
It's not Armenia.
No, not Armenia. No, I mean it's a different language.
Are they Assyrian?
Maybe.
You know, because they're a group called the Syrian that are Christian.
Right. They're I think that's the group where they still have.
In Iran.
Right.
I've heard of it also.
Dr. Rosen.
Syria?
Dr. Rosen once brought in to me a copy of something, and there were three things. So, one of them was a transliteration. And the translation, of course, immediately I recognized what it was. I mean, because, you know, it was actually the Lord's Prayer written in Aramaic, but they had it translated into English because this group, you know. But then I said, you know what the other one is? He said, no, he couldn't figure out what it is. I said, that's called Syriac.
Syriac. Can a Syrian hold a conversation with an Arabic and understand each other?
Well, if you're talking about modern Syria, Arabic is their language. Syrians, Lebanese, they all talk Arabic. Right.
Is the Ketubah written in Aramaic? Is that
of course. The marriage document is written in Aramaic, absolutely.
Ketubah's written?
Oh, yeah. Your marriage document is written in Aramaic, absolutely. It's partly Hebrew. But a good deal of the text, I would say the major part of the text is Aramaic.
Some of the Haggadah is also Aramaic.
Haggadah?
A little bit.
Are there words in there that... There's some words in there that seem strange.
Actually, in the stichus that we were saying, so there are a couple of paragraphs in Aramaic. Of course, actually, every Shabbos, when we say Yukum Purkan or Brich Shmei, that's Aramaic also.
Aramaic words in Kaddish.
Kaddish too, correct. Right.
Aren't there a few verses in the Torah somewhere in Aramaic?
There are two words in Aramaic, right. Yaakov Avinu, he's escaping from Laban with his family and wants to go back to Eretz Israel. And finally, Laban catches up to him. And Laban gives him a bawling out. How dare you take
my
daughters, my children, etc., right? And so Jacob laces into him. He says, how about all those years that I worked for you? You never gave me a straight deal. Whenever I fulfilled what I did, you immediately changed the terms and so on and so forth. And I never stole anything from you, and I suffered cold and heat and everything else and so on and so forth. So they finally come to an agreement, and they say, over here, in this place, it's like a boundary. I will never come across in order to harm you, and you'll never come across to harm me, right? And so they made a covenant over there, they had a meal, and they called the place Yegar Sahadusa. And then they gave the Hebrew equivalent, which is Galid. In other words, this heap of earth, which is a witness to the fact, Galid. Gal in this case means like a heap of earth, okay? All right. That's other meanings too, however. All right. So, anyway, we had this. All right. Now, the Mishnah, if you remember, continues and says that while we are permitted to skip from one section to another in the Navi, right, in the prophetic writings, but the Yemen Dalgam and Torah, we're not allowed to skip when we read the Torah. We're not allowed to do that. So the Gemara says, Raminho, hey, we got a question about that. Why? Because we find in the Gemara, in Yuma, that as part of the service on Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash, in days of old, the Kohen Gadol also read from the Torah. Okay? So, he wanted to read a section which had to deal with the laws of Yom Kippur, right? Okay, so he read, of course, he read, first of all, Achrei Mos, exactly the same reading that we read to this very day on Yom Kippur in the morning, this is our reading in Chakras, right? And then he read the Ach Be'asor V'Chodesh. Ach Be'asor. Ach Be'Cholot Chodesh. it's a picture, all right. Achrimos, as we know, that's the name of a parsha, right? What comes after that parsha? You have Kedoshim, right? And then after Kedoshim, we have Emor. Now, Ach Be'osor is a passage that we read in Parsha Emor, okay? But of course, what is Ach Be'osor? And likewise, on the 10th day of the 7th month, and so on and so forth. And again, it describes, you know, that this is a day of, you know, Yom Kippurim, etc., etc., okay? So, he's actually reading then what? He's reading a couple of sedras further on, you understand? But nevertheless, he is skipping over there. So, isn't this a contradiction to where we learn over here that you're not allowed to skip in the reading of the Torah? All right? So, the whole becoming dolly to say, but isn't he skipping over there? So, Amar Abaye, so Abaye says, Loi Kasha. It's not a difficulty. He says, in one case, you don't do it because you don't want to interrupt the miturgeman. And in another case, again, you want to, in order that the miturgeman should interrupt in between. Apparently, what he's saying, that first of all, is that in the Beis HaMikdash, even there, the custom was that when the Kohen Gadol read the passage from the Torah, that there was somebody who was also translating over there. This would seem to be the implication.
So I have a question.
Yes.
How wasn't the Kohen Gadol in a special place?
Sure.
Separated from the congregation?
Well, he was in different places.
When
he entered into the Holy of Holies, he went in by himself. Nobody else was there. Nobody else was allowed to go in over there. Understand? Never. Only he was permitted to go in over there.
Right.
Okay. But he also had to perform things in the general courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Right. So when he was out in the courtyard and doing his part of the service, so part of the service also was that he read from the Torah. Okay. All right. So, apparently the reason that they're giving over here is then in order not to interrupt the miturgeman, or maybe we could interrupt the miturgeman. However, but in connection with this, didn't we learn in the Mishnah over here that what mitalgim midovi mitalgim Torah, that you are permitted to skip in the prophets, but you're not allowed to skip in the Torah? And how long, how much, you know, how far could he skip? And the answer is, right? Which means that only as long as the Turgamon, you know, is not going to stop his translation. But once he reaches the end of it, then at that point, he can't go any further, right? So they say, Miklal de Betorah, Kalal. So it says, so we see, right, and in the Torah it says Kalal, right? Kalalo. So it should not be able to do it. So Elam Abaye, so now Abaye comes up with a different explanation. That has nothing to do with the Miturgamon, but it has to deal with what I said earlier, namely, Lo Kashi, he says. It's not a difficulty, he says. Kan be'inyon echad, kan b'shtei inyon. In other words, when the subject matter is the same, so there is where they permitted the Kohen Gadol to read, even though he was skipping, you know, a couple of parshas in order to get to the passage in Emor, okay? But, yeah. But if it was, you know, more than one difference, you know, in other words, the subject matter was not the same subject matter, then in that particular case, it would not be permissible to skip in the Torah reading. However, in the Novi, in the Prophet, they do permit skipping in Shnei Inyan. Okay. So, common competition, but in any case, it should be not longer than when the Targum stops translating. Tanya Yidach, we have another teaching as well, which says, Ein Medalgim and Novi Novi, that you're not allowed to skip from one prophet into another prophet, but with a Novi shall stay Moser Medalgim. However, when it is to the 12, there it is permissible to skip from one to another, Uvilvad, but on condition, Shalom Yidaleg Mesofa Sefer Liskinosol, you should not skip from the beginning. From the end of the scroll that he has to its very beginning. All right. Now, first of all, to understand this, we have to know that we have how many prophets?
Five.
I mean, how many the literary prophets, so to speak? I mean, there are many prophets. We learned a long time ago that there were 48 prophets,
oh,
and so on, right? But not all of them wrote words, prophecy, you understand? All right. Micha, and so on and so forth. Habakkuk, Nochem, you name them, okay? Zechariah, Malachi, Haggai, and so on, okay? So we have, right. In the Hebrew, we call them the Shnei Basar, because there are 12 of them. Okay?
Amos.
Yeah, I said almost, so, yeah. So, there are 12 of them. So, that's the Hebrew name. In the English translation, which is actually based upon the Latin, they're called minor prophets.
Minor.
Right. So Latin, you know, minor in this case means lesser. That's a problem. So the question, I don't like to use the term minor prophet. Why don't I like it? But the simple reason that the word minor indicates that it's not as important as the others.
Right.
And on the other hand, I mean, in my opinion, many of the things that were said by Hosea, by Amos, and others, and so on, Micha, you name it, I mean, they're just as important as what is said, by the three major prophets, okay? They are major. Partly because they had a lot more to say. We have a lot more of their writings, understand? So that makes them major. But I don't want to feel, that the others are, not as important. They are important, okay? Because they also spoke the word of God. So, but they are called in Hebrew the Shnei Masar, and they are considered as one big collection of prophecies. Understand? So what we're saying over here right now is, okay, in general, if we want to skip from, let's say we're reading in Yeshayahu, okay? We cannot suddenly skip from Yeshayahu to what? To Yirmiyahu, Yecheskel, anything like that. You have to stick to that. So that's it, period. You're not allowed to skip over. Maybe you could skip, as I pointed out a little earlier this evening, sometimes you skip for the purpose, but you're still within the same prophet. You're not going into another prophet, okay?
The purpose of consolation.
Right, exactly. But if you are reading a Haftorah from the 12 prophets, the Shnei Basar, then it's permitted to skip from one to another. This would be the reason why, for example, we have Shuvah Yisrael, which we read this past Shabbos, right, Shabbos Shuvah, and that is from what book in the Bible?
It's the what?
Shuvah Yisrael. It's Hosea. It's Hosea. Okay. Hosea is the first, the list of the 12, okay? Then after that we read Miel Kamocha, and we skip to where? To the prophet Micha. Okay, that's the El Kamocha comes in. Then we wind up with a section taken from Yoel, the book of Joel. Okay? Which is actually in the order in which we find it goes back again. But we're not going, let's say, to Malachi, which is the last of the prophets, and then going back again to the beginning. That we can't do. So this is what they say. You are permitted to consider the Shnei Masor as one and to skip from one prophet to another, but you're not allowed to go to the end and then suddenly go back again to the beginning. You have to go in a more or less in an order which makes sense. Yeah.
Now, are we talking about these readings, this order has to do with when you're reading the whole Haftorah or when you're quoting from it?
No. When you're reading it publicly.
Publicly, as a Haftorah.
As a Haftorah, exactly. But not talking about quotations.
No. Now, quotations you can do...
You can do whichever way you want.
Throughout
right.
the Siddur, there are
right.
quotations from varieties of places.
Absolutely.
You see it in the footnotes, you know.
Absolutely,
you
know. Right.
That you can do.
Yeah, yeah.
Any variety.
Yeah, right. So that's something to do, right.
That's the difference.
Yeah. Here we're talking about
the
public reading of Torah and Haftorah. Yeah. See, this is what we're talking about at this point over here. As I said, you know, the third chapter, even though it first began with the question about, you know, reading of the Megillah, but very soon it came into laws that pertain to the reading of the Torah in general. This is what we've been studying for the past few weeks.
Wasn't
okay?
the Torah at one time read in
That's already a different story. I spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. When they had the triennial cycle, by the way, it wasn't universal, but there was. I mean, there were areas where they did it, okay? But the correct procedure was that wherever you left off on Shabbos for the previous week, that's where you began the following week. Nothing at all like what they do in conservative congregations. Okay?
So they read, if they were reading a third, it would be a consecutive third.
Right, right, exactly, right, yeah. Not at all like that. And I think, frankly, that the conservative got the idea from the Reform, because if you take a look in the old, what do they call it, the Union Prayer Book, you'll see that they have also, you know, that they have suggested readings of the Torah or something like that. And this is probably where they got the idea from. Okay. The basic reason why they do it is A, they don't want a long service. People don't have to go to daven and listen to Torah.
But you could get the story in 3 years. I mean,
of course, there's no sequence.
There's
no continuity, exactly. But, you know, they want to identify or be identified with the parsha that is read throughout the world. Yeah. Okay. All right. We have a new Mishnah now on Chav Dalet. Okay, and it begins Hamachter Benovi who pareis al shemava who over lifnei hatevav who doseis kavod. Okay, so far, what are they saying? It says that the person who is reciting the Haftorah in the prophet, right? He also is given the honor of what? Poreis al Shema. Now we've had in Poreis al Shema before where it said you're not allowed to do it unless you have a minyan. Okay? And at that particular time, so there's a whole Megillah that we had that if people come in late and they can, you know, repeat or something or other. Okay. Here, Poreis is simply, in other words, you don't begin saying Borchu and you know, the couple of brachas that follow before the Shema Yisrael and so on. Do you understand? In the prayer book. First you have Baruch Hu, okay? Then you have two brachas always before the reading of the Shema Yisrael, and then of course the Shema Yisrael. And then after that we always have, you know, either one or two brachas of Geula, or the custom develops up as one of having three during the week. One on Shabbos and the other not two. Okay. So, at any rate, what they're saying is over here is simply that the person who reads the Haftorah is also given the honor of doing what? Of davening for the Amid as far as the first part of the chakras, you know, the major part of the chakra service is concerned, namely the Shema and the blessings that precede it, okay? And also over the Ateva, and also he stands before the Ark, which means simply that he's the one who's also the Chazan to recite Shmona Esrei, the Amida, you understand? That's what it means by Ovel of the Ateva. But who knows, say it's Kapov, if he happens to be a Kohen, what else is he given the honor to do?
Give
the blessing, right, priestly blessing. So far we're talking about a person who is, you know, an adult. But now we learn something else. But Imhoyo Koton, Now what happens if they have a minor who reads the Haftorah? And we can see from this that it is permissible to have a minor read the Haftorah because it's not considered part of the Torah reading.
We already learned earlier that a minor or a woman could read, but that was from the Torah itself.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes. Well, that's in case, you know, that people, right,
available.
There's nobody else available, yeah. Correct.
This is different. This is just the
Haftorah. Right, right, yeah. So, in Oya Koton, and if he was a minor, then in that case, Oviv O Rabo Ovin Al Yodo. Then in that particular case, either his father or his Rebbe, they perform, you know, they daven, you know, next to him, okay? Then it says, Koton Kore Batoro Umetargem. It is permissible under what we learned before in that previous mission over there, where we said that, you know, it's a normal rule, even a minor or even a woman is permitted to read. So they say, okay, a minor can read the Torah. Of course, we don't hold that today, you understand? I mean, we're reading Mishnah, but it doesn't mean that everything that we read in the Mishnah is necessarily accepted as the halacha today, okay? So a minor can read in the Torah. Umatakim, he can also do what? He can translate, right, into Aramaic. Avol eino pores al shma, but he cannot go up to the Omid, right, and daven either, you know, the section from Baruch Hu to the Shema Yisrael. Also, the eino no over to the Hateva, nor is he allowed to be the chazan, say Shema Nesra, for the Erlam, you understand? The Einu Nose is Kapov. Also, he's not allowed, if he's a Kohen, to Duchen. He has to be an adult in order to Duchen. Okay? Now we have an interesting Mishnah of ours. It says, Bokheyach, what if a person is not dressed properly? Bokheyach is somebody who is actually, according to the commentators, Bokheyach is somebody who doesn't wear, not just he does not wearing a jacket, but he's bare chested or something like that, okay? Nebuch, I mean, he's an Oramon, maybe, and he only has, a cloak.
Bokheyach means open, but
Yeah, this is
Bokheyach.
It's a different word.
He's also open.
Yeah. Different word, okay?
He's right. Having a full menu.
Right. Yeah. So, Rashi says that in Masechet Sofrim, which is a tractate, one of the minor tractates, it says, Meforesh, we have an explanation for this word, but Kol Shekra of Dirin, or Room, the Yochef, and he translates it, okay. So, in other words, somebody whose knees can be seen, okay? I guess that means not to wear shorts when you're davening for the Yomit, okay? Yeah, and nor should he be barefoot, standing up over there and daven. Okay. Not allowed, yes.
What is the word pores?
Pores?
Yes, what is
that? It's a good question. What does it mean? One meaning of the word pores is actually to break. I told you that, for example, in the Haftorah for Yom Kippur that we read from Yeshayahu in the morning, so it says that the purpose of the fast is, you know, to break bread and share it, you understand? And they use the word pores over there, nephros, and so on and so forth. Of course, another meaning of the word nephros, usually spelled with the sin rather than the samach, is, you know, to spread something over, okay? So that's another meaning of it. But I also told you that, for example, Erev Shabbos, when you're cooking, you should have at least the food at the stage where it is at least half cooked. This is what they called Achilas Pras, okay? Before Shabbos, and then it could continue cooking by itself from that point on, okay? So, This is the reason why the first time that we came across this, we said if people, let's say, came in late, in other words, it's as if the congregation was broken into two different groups. So in that particular case, we said then they can say Baruch Hu in the beginning of the Shema and something like that. It's a sort of catch-up, okay. So I said this is probably the reason why in Eretz Yisrael, for example, in the evening, when they conclude the Maariv service, then there's another Baruch Hu at that particular point. Okay. For the benefit of the latecomers, really. Well, that's the basic idea. Okay. So, but here... Yeah. Here it simply means to actually lead the service, from Baruch Hu through the Shema and its blessings. Okay? That's what they how we have to understand it. Okay.
He wouldn't be there without a talus, though. Would he would have a talus covering in any case, even if he was bare chested. Would he be wrapped in a shawl?
Well, it's a good question. It's a good question. It's a good question. It's
minhag?
Not a minhag exactly.
Well, see, some people wear a talus, some people don't.
Yeah, people.
Not married, don't wear a talus.
Well, that's already a whole. We're going into a whole business. There was a time, for example, in Kadima, when any boy who became a mitzvah automatically wore a talus from that point on at Shabbos services.
But then
Kadima,
they stopped.
Well, in general, this was the custom in Western Europe. Yeah.
But then the unmarried young men did not wear a talus and shul, but when they went up to daven, someone
right.
always gave
and
them
they
a
put
talus.
It on. Correct. Stodra. Correct. Right. Right.
They yeah. still do that.
So the talus is required as far as
the
right for the shachmas service.
Right.
Right. It's not required for mincha, but we do it for a very good reason. Because first of all, the mitzvah tzitzis, which is after all this is a garment but tzitzis but fridges. It's a daytime one. Mamidavid Mincha was still during the day. But there's another reason. Another reason is this. Unfortunately, today, a lot of people don't wear a talus cotton.
Right.
In other words,
what?
You know, a talus cotton, you know.
Abercrombie.
They don't wear it. So, if they go up to Davin, at least they put a talus on.
Yeah,
so, right.
And if everybody does it, it doesn't put anyone to shame.
Right,
that's
exactly. That's exactly what it is. Right.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly.
So
I think that's great.
Yeah. Okay, so now we learned that a miner, while he may possibly, lead, in, right, that he could read the Torah or could translate, but nevertheless he cannot daven for the yomim, right? So this is what we learned right now. Okay. And if he's a kohen, he's not allowed to do it. And the person who is not dressed properly, so he can again do the early part. Umetargim, he can also translate, see a translator. Aval eino korei b'Torah, but he's not allowed to go and read the Torah dressed this way. Okay. Nor v'eino ovil v'neativa, he's not allowed to daven for the omen, the say Shmoneh Esrei. V'eino nosei es kapov, a kohen who dressed in this way also is not allowed to go up and to recite the blessing for the people. Okay? Suma, on the other hand, now we have a different problem. A person who is blind. Okay? So, Pores Eshma, he is permitted to lead from Baruch Hu and so on and so forth. Umetargim, and he's also allowed to be Metargim. In other words, obviously he cannot do what?
He can't read,
the Torah. This is obvious,
to,
right?
Yeah,
he can't see blind. It's okay, right?
But he can't see it.
Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol Shnei Ro'a Me'oris B'Yomo V'Inu Parishma. Rabbi Yehuda says that anyone who has never seen light at all from the time that he was born, then he cannot be Torah, Koris El Shema. He cannot say, why not? Because what is the first bracha that we say in the morning after Baruch Hu? It's a bracha that begins with Yotzei Ro Ravori Choshech. We praise God who created light, right, and also darkness and so on, and right. And the bracha continues, with thanking God that we have light. Okay, and the bracha can then concludes Baruch Hashem Yotzei Ham Yoros. We praise God who created the light-giving bodies in the sky. So, okay? All right. So, according to Rav Yehuda, a blind person has never seen it, so how can he go up there and make this bracha? This is what he said. All right. We'll discover that the halacha doesn't necessarily follow this way. Okay. Let's see. You know what? I think I'll stop at this point. All right. Tonight is the 2nd of October, the year 2002.
You want me to get your glass of water?
No, that's okay. Thanks very much. A glass of the schnapps, I don't know. Whatever it may be. But anyway, we are now at the bottom of Maseches Megillah, Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, the bottom of 24a, where we learned the Mishnah at the bottom of the page last week. I'll just mention very briefly what it dealt with, and then we will see how the Gemara analyzes each section over here. Okay? So we are ready right now. All right. I'll do it simply phrase by phrase. The Mishnah began by saying that the person who reads the Maftir in the prophets, right? So he also is given the privilege of leading the Shachris service, that is the Poreis al Shema. In other words, you know, he recites, you know, from Borchu and the brachas that follow, the Huavir of Te'ateva, and also he's the one who leads in the reciting of the Shmona Esra. The who knows here is Kapov, and if he happens to be also a Kohen, then in that case he's the one who duchens for the Erlim as well. I simply want to say one thing in that connection. You know that technically a Kohen should duchen every morning, technically. And in Eretz Yisrael we find that Taka, this is a common practice, particularly in Yerushalayim, but many other areas of Eretz Yisrael too, that the Kohen goes to duchen every morning. For whatever reason it happened, that happened, you know, that in the Gola, Jews were, you know, so the practice developed, you know, that they only reserved Duchenin for Musaf on the holidays, okay? And then a further minhag developed at many places that they do not Duchen on Shabbos. But in other places, they do duchen on Shabbos. So that would depend upon. We don't duchen on Shabbos. Our minhag is not to do it. Now remember, the Hunts Point Center, we never duchen on Shabbos either. Right. But nevertheless, if you go, for example, to the shul where I davened on Pesach, or Sukkot, you know, with my sons, young Israel, so there the Kohanim do go up to duchen on Shabbos as well. So, yes. That's a different story. I'll tell you why the conservatives stopped doing it. They stopped doing it years and years ago because they said, look, why should we kid ourselves? People are Kohanim and not people who observe Shabbos, and so so therefore they shouldn't go up in order to do it.
Very final.
But
that's not true.
Nevertheless, this is not actually what the halacha is. The halacha is that if a Kohen, you know, we'll see afterwards about the question about whether a Kohen has a blemish someplace. But apart from that, the law is that if a Kohen is a person who had shed blood, then in that case he doesn't go up to Duchen. Now, thank God most of our Kohanim are not shedders of blood.
But that's the only thing they don't say that it has to be.
Yeah. So that therefore they still have the mitzvah. The point is that they still have the mitzvah to do it. But nevertheless, there is a strong sentiment, you know, among many people, that only a Kohen who is a Shomer Shabbos should really go up there in order to do it. This, as I say, is a feeling among people, but it's not what the halacha is. I know that Rabbi Lamb said that every Kohen in the shul should go up in order to do it. Some do, some don't. I mean, this is what
the general opinion is.
Yes.
Everybody who is a Kohen should do it, regardless of
right,
the Shomer
right.
Shabbos.
Right,
yeah. Matter of fact,
well,
even
I say,
a
this
criminal,
is the halacha,
even
right.
A criminal. Obviously, who hasn't shed blood, but even
well,
a guy who's a jailbird.
Yeah. I got to tell you something interesting.
All right. I mean, there are other disqualifications as well, by the way.
You know, I never duck him.
Right.
Originally.
Yeah.
I got my wife's school got a hold of me one day.
Right.
He told me he's not to duck him. I said, no, I should, under the basis of describing
right,
because
right.
I've got to observe.
Yeah.
Totally. And he said, no, he says, go up and Among other reasons that there people were disappearing who were doing it.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
To continue.
Wouldn't be any more Kohanim.
This is true.
You have to
and
right.
Before that, I'm sure there was other Kohanim that were not going off the same route, but that's
yeah.
When I started to go.
Right, right. I'm glad that you do go up. At least we have a bracha from you, from Al, and so
this
on.
This way we right. think you do everything and you obey everything.
Aren't they talking about the Shliach Tzibur here?
Right.
They are talking about a person, right, who goes up as a Shliach Tzibur,
right.
That he is given the honor. That if he is given the honor to read the Haftorah, right. So in that case he's also given the following honors as well. This is what the Mishnah says, okay? Doesn't mean that today we necessarily do it, but this is what the Mishnah says should be the practice. Okay? Yeah.
But if he's reading the Haftorah,
yeah.
Then you're talking about Shabbos.
Oh,
the Haftorah would be.
Haftorah normally follows, this is correct.
Uh-oh.
So it doesn't
so
indicate whether it should be the following morning or something, or it doesn't mean that morning too.
How about Musa?
Well, it doesn't mention it. But the Musaf also probably would be the same story because Ovel of the Ateva means that you go up to lead the congregation in Shmon Esrei.
Well, actually,
this is what it means.
Right, there
is
right. A Shmon Esrei in the
Musaf. So
actually,
the Musaf is the same thing,
custom,
probably.
Custom of
right.
Shuls are, yeah. If you read the Haftorah, you finish, you daven Musaf.
Many shuls do have that custom. That's true, that the person who they honor with the Haftorah, so they usually ask them to stay on to daven Musaf as well.
Does that have
right.
Anything to do with the degree of observance?
The piety? It's not mentioned. It's
see,
not mentioned.
That was brought up, though, because
right.
Bezucha
yeah.
De Zimro.
Right.
I was told that separates from the you had to have the Shomer Shabbos go up the Dalm Shabbos and Mursiv, not Bezucha De Zimro. Now, I'm only
well,
quoting.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if they were the authorities.
I don't know either, but this became the established practice over here. Okay.
Yes.
Right.
You follow that?
Right.
No. What
bezuka de Zimra, you can have they're sending up people who will do the bezuka de Zimra, the opening of the davening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Introductory prayer.
But that same person was not permitted to go and do chakras or mursiv if he wanted to because they said he wasn't observant.
Yeah. When we talk about chakras over here, you have to realize that there are different sections in the morning service. There are, first of all, the introductory brachas that we recite. After that, there is the selection taken from the Book of Psalms. Ashrei, Hallelujahs, and so on, you know, preceded by Baruch Shayomar and ending with Yishtabach, okay? And then after that comes the real core of chakras, which continues, you know, from Baruch Hu and the blessings before the Shema Yisrael, and continuing through the Shmoneh Esrei, and then the conclusion of part of the service.
Right.
Okay? So, our here in Kadima became an unofficial ruling, okay? That person who starts the service, Pesukei Dezimra, doesn't necessarily have to be a Shabbos. But the minute that you get to the actual chakras itself on Shabbos, we're talking about Shabbos,
right.
Then he should be a Shabbos.
Shabbos?
Huh?
No, there's no ruling about Muslims.
It's the same thing would apply.
After the first section,
right.
Then that rule applies
right.
To the rest of the
right.
Service.
Yeah.
That they have to be Shabbos observant to,
right.
To
right.
Do the Muslims?
Yeah.
There's no ruling on that, you said. I mean,
well,
no,
as
no
I say, it's
about
an unofficial ruling. Okay. This is the
that.
Ruling that, I mean, this is what we practice here in the shul. Okay.
So, Kohen doesn't have to be, but a leader of the Musaf does have to be.
Should be. Should be.
Doesn't mean that they are, but
should
they
should be.
Strive
okay.
For
okay, right,
is
yeah.
Israel,
absolutely. They dochen every morning over there.
This is an issue.
Right. The only exception would be on Tisha B'Av when they don't do it in the morning. The mincha they may or may not. It depends what time they're doing it. Okay. Yeah. But apart from that, they do it every single day. Yeah. All right. So this is the first part then of the Mishnah. So we see that they're honoring the person who davens. You know, who recites the Maftir by also encouraging him, you know, to lead the davening, you know. Okay, So far, so good. And if he's a Kohen, then in that particular case, you know, he's also encouraged to lead the congregation. All right. Then the Mishnah continued. Hi, good evening. And it said, V'yimhoye koton. Now, what if, however, the person who did maftir, who recited, is a minor? Now, that already teaches us something. What?
That a minor may do.
That a minor may read a haftorah. Okay? This teaches us that a minor may read a haftorah. Okay? Mishnah says if a minor can read it. So,
in
what happens?
It doesn't happen very often, though, does it?
It doesn't happen very often.
Wait for the
minor
still boys, at least.
Right. Yeah. Normally, that's absolutely true. Okay? So, but nevertheless, according to the Mishnah, as I say, you know, not everything in the Mishnah is the established practice today. But 2,000 years ago, it was the established practice, unless, you know, there was opposition, which were able to, you know, to convince the authorities, so to speak, you know, that there was a valid counter-argument, okay? All right, so the Mishnah then tells us then that in Hoya Koton, right, what if the person who reads off Torah is a minor? Then is a minor permitted to go up to Davin for the Omen? The answer is no. Okay. So who is going to do it? He says, Ovi Vorabo, Ovi Ragodo. Okay? Then either his father or his Rebbe, they go up in order to read. Ayodo might mean they stand next to him or something like that. Maybe that's what it is. Okay? Mm-hmm. But at any rate, they're the ones who do it, right?
In his behalf.
Yeah, it's a possibility. It depends how you translate what Ayodo means. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right.
In our show, like minor reads on Shabbos before tomorrow.
Yeah, the morning you mean?
Yeah,
well, I see Friday night, for example, they send up one of the kids to lead in, you know, from the Hunaranada until they get up to the Kaddish. At that point, then they, you know, that's it, they're finished, okay? Yeah. All right. Then it says, next thing, that Katan Kore Batorah, that a minor can read the Torah, Humatargim, and he can also translate, you know, as we said, translate.